First book of Shmuel the prophet, 1 and that would 1 through to 18.
And from the Messianic writings this morning, we heard from the first letter written to the Messianic community, or just plainly the Jewish community, in Thessalonica. And that was come from chapter 4 and verses 13 through to 18. When I wrote the title for this, because it's in the file, right, and as always at this time of year, you know, you bring up then previous versions and so on, and in previous versions I've got Welcome to the New Year and themes and titles around the talks around that kind of idea. And I looked at it this year and I thought, really? So I've called this title New Year or What? To be provocative and controversial, because it's kind of really where I'm going today. And I don't try and deliberately be provocative and controversial. You know that's not who I am. Unfortunately, I tend to end up being that in some way or form. But nevertheless, if I'm doing it, it's because I want to challenge, I want to dig deeper, and want to find some truth in all of this. So I'm going to say welcome to the first festival of the autumn high holy days. That's what we are today, and the name of it and title of it we're going to look at in a moment and dig around all of this. It is the day the Lord commanded for us to have a holy convocation and assembly together to worship Him in Leviticus, Vayikra and elsewhere. But actually, I'm going to stick my neck out here and say, just right at the beginning so you know what is going on and why, it is not Jewish New Year. I mean, it is actually Jewish New Year, on one level, because the rabbis decreed it to be such. That was the tradition that was established, and the global Jewish community around the world today, on the whole, follows along with that, and it is known today out there in the rest of the world as Jewish New Year. And on that level, you know, I'm not going to argue too much. That is what the world knows it as. You don't have to go far, whether it's in newspapers or elsewhere on the internet, to see big companies and media wishing their blessings and everything for the Jewish New Year. That's what it is in this world right now. But the Torah knows of no such festival by that name. That's a fact. I'm not inventing it. I'm not making it up. It's a fact of the scriptures. The Torah knows this day as Yom Teruah, the day of the blowing of the shofar. That's what it's called. That's what today actually biblically is, Yom Teruah. And as I said at the beginning, I'm encouraged on one level now, looking through various blogs and articles again and again and again. It was Yom Teruah which was coming up in the discussion about today, and not so much Rosh Hashanah. It's almost like there's a global awakening and awareness and an understanding that is dawning on people that really this is what this day is called, what it originally was known as, and what the title is there about, what's happening on this day, and we need to get back to understanding what this actually is. And of course, that sounds really easy, doesn't it? When you say get back to what Yom Teruah really is, because then you've got to go through the scriptures and find out what it really is. And this is where then it can get a little disappointing, because in fact there's not a huge amount mentioned in the Torah about it. In fact, when you strip it bare, what you're actually looking at, and really, honestly, this makes Yom Teruah, the commandments around this day, really, really easy to keep. I mean, really easy to keep, right? I mean, let's be honest, it's a Shabbat. We know we're not working today. We're all here, right? We're watching online. We're not working today. You're doing that. I doubt that any of you woke up and went, oh no, I've got to take a day off work. That's not how you reacted, was it? I'm sure most of you were like, great, today off work, I don't have to go to work today. That wasn't difficult, was it? That wasn't a challenge. We're here meeting together, worshipping. And I bet none of you woke up this morning and went, oh, I've got to go today. Right? No, you leapt out of bed with joy. You couldn't wait to be with all the other people here because you love everyone so much and everyone gets on so amazingly wonderfully in our community. And it's a glorious, wonderful place to be and you couldn't wait to be here, right? That wasn't difficult either. What about the only other commandment? The only other commandment associated with this day. There's only one. Yeah, there's only one, right? So if I were to ask you, go on then, you put your hand up, what is that one commandment? No. It is not blowing the shofar. It is hearing the shofar, yeah. Sorry, trick question. I laid the trap. You always played into it. But this is one that we all get wrong. I mean, people say, there's only what is the commandment? We're going to blow the shofar. Obviously, we're going to blow. And we will do it in a moment. We'll be blowing the shofar. That isn't what we're commanded to do. Actually, according to the Torah, we're commanded to hear the shofar, which means someone is blowing it, right? I mean, it doesn't blow itself. But that's intriguing in its own way, isn't it? And also, you know, this is, you know what I'm always like with this. Look at what the text says, not what you think it says. And if there's little holes in it and gaps and bits and pieces which make you think, good, because you're meant to think, you're meant to engage, and you're meant to draw down ideas and thoughts around it. When you see these little bits of holes, it's meant to provoke you to think. You're meant to hear the shofar. If you've done that on this day and you've met and you've worshipped here, you've literally fulfilled every single commandment about this day. It's not even difficult, really, is it? That should be really, really easy. I mean, Yeshua said it was easy, right? My yoke is easy, he said. He said it should be easy. And it is, if you actually just look at what the Torah is. We know that also the Torah is really clear on all of this. When the year starts, and it is just before Pesach. Torah is actually very clear on this. That's the beginning, like biblical new year, which makes sense because the Pesach festival is the first festival of our cycle of festivals, beginning with our deliverance and salvation and so on, and it works its way through the year. And we saw most of the spring festivals then with a connection with Messiah, and that becomes very clear and obvious even from the scriptures what that is all about. Less so when we begin to get into the autumn festivals in this way. Which again begs the question, you know, what is the deep point of this? If we're in the summer months at the minute and have been for the last 2,000 years, then at some point we're going to be kicking off again and seeing the real messianic understanding and fulfillment of these autumn festivals. And we need to know what we are looking for. So I'm a curious soul, as you know. So I thought, where's the best place to go and find out about Rosh Hashanah and its origins and roots? The best place, obviously, Dr. Google, my great friend, because obviously Dr. Google knows everything about everything, right? That's obviously the place to go to. And I was really shocked at what I found, actually, just on a shallow digging through websites and blogs and so on to find the real point of it all. I found copious amounts of material about the historical transformation by the rabbis of the original festival into Rosh Hashanah. The historical changes around the name change and its connection with creation and so on. All of that is interesting and fascinating. There's loads of material about all of that, but very little else. So I thought, right, I need to go somewhere else. You want to find out about Rosh Hashanah? Where's the place to go? Right, scriptures. Went back to Dr. Google. Give me verses about Rosh Hashanah. And it gave me hundreds. Which I found a little bit upsetting, actually, on one list. Because none, and I mean none, of the verses which Google listed for me had anything to do with Rosh Hashanah. It listed them because of rabbinic tradition. And that was it. Because when you read each one of those verses, none of them directly references Rosh Hashanah. disconcerting, really. So you begin to think, when you're looking at this, as I do, with my kind of research hat on, at that point I'm thinking, you know, when I meet that kind of wall of information in that way, which on the surface is confusing and doesn't add up and doesn't answer the right question, but wants to be answering it but clearly isn't, and people aren't questioning it and not challenging it, that for me says to my mind, you need to find the truth in all of this, because that's a cloud of mist. And I'm not never happy with that. I want to find out more. I want to get down to what is really going on. Even, I have to say, some of the Christian sites about Rosh Hashanah were all assuming that the verses in Leviticus and elsewhere about gathering together and blowing the shofar and blah blah blah, that all of them are talking about Rosh Hashanah. Quite mad in some ways. This automatic working assumption throughout. But I have to tell you, there is one place in the whole of the Tanakh where Rosh Hashanah is mentioned. I've just said it wasn't. I'm now going to show you one place where it is. What it isn't. What it is. Wait for it. Here we go. Ezekiel chapter 40, verse 1. I'm going to read the English translation, see if you can spot where it is. Blink and you'll miss it. Here we go. In the 25th year of our captivity at the beginning of the year, on the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after the city was captured, on that very same day, the hand of the Lord was upon me and he took me there. That's the English translation. Did you get where it was? At the beginning of the year. That's how it's translated. The English translation doesn't actually translate it as Rosh Hashanah, because it's not. When is the beginning of the year? Right? And yet, in the Hebrew, you'll see Rosh Hashanah. Quite interesting. It's the only place where it is directly, as it were, referenced in that way. Blink it, blink, and you'll miss it. But that's not talking about the Rosh Hashanah today. It's not talking about this. Talk about the beginning of the year, the head, Rosh, head of the year, Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, the beginning of the year. And we know when that is. Again, as I say, check what the text actually says, not what you think it is saying. And it's interesting that they didn't translate it as Rosh Hashanah there in that way, because of course that's not what today would be understanding with that. They avoided that in the English translation. Check the text and see what is going on. In fact, as I dug even deeper still, there are no extant writings of the first century or before that time that documents even the name of Rosh Hashanah. Not even Josephus, who is known for his detailed writings on various sacrifices and all the things that were going on in history, and wrote it all down, even Josephus fails to call this day Rosh Hashanah. Well, that just kind of really begs the question of what on earth then is going on? What have we got in all of this? We have a festival commanded by the Lord that we have to keep, that has no direct correlation to either a national event in history, Pesach coming out of Egypt, right, an event in history, that has one, nor is it an agricultural connection, right, Shavuot, for instance, right? Nothing. There's nothing in, rooted in history or as an event or a moment, and this day hangs by itself. But it's so important that we have to take a day off work for. It's so important we have to take the time to come together and worship the Lord on, and clearly there's something about this day which is meant to speak to us powerfully about what God is doing here on this planet in some way. We've seen that because of the spring festivals. When God acts, he connects his acts with his festivals, the festivals of the Lord, because they speak to us about what he is doing. So, no national historic event connected with it. I know the rabbis went back and said, well, okay, we know that's a problem, therefore we'll link creation with it, because I think in the rabbinic mind they probably felt that tension and they were uneasy with it and wanted to connect something with this day, so creation was brought in to buttress that as the historical national event, if you want to see it in that way. But of course, again, the Torah doesn't reference that. The Torah doesn't say that this is when creation happened. It could have. You know, traditions aren't always bad, they're not automatically wrong. It could have, but the Torah does not directly reference creation to this day. So what are we going to do? We have a bit of a conundrum. There's a bit of a thing going on then. When we can look at this and just say, well, you know what, on one level the rabbi sorted it all, they connected that, and he did this, and they've given us all his theme, and they renamed the day. You know, that you could possibly live with on one level, but as Messianic Jews, who aren't just going to accept the status quo, I think, of anything, because Messianic Jews don't tend to be those kind of people, we need to find a deeper understanding and connection in particular with Messiah. Why? Colossians 2:16-17 says, does it not, these holy days are the shadows and the substance of things to come. The substance and the shadows. The substance is yet coming, and the shadows we see today on a day like this one of Yom Teruah. But Messiah, the depth of this is only going to become clear in Messiah. He is the substance of these days. For us, as Messianic Jews, we need to get back and connect Yom Teruah in some way with Messiah if we're going to see and feel the full impact of what this day is all about. Yom Teruah, its actual biblical name. In fact, we may even go so far, if we wanted to be cheerfully controversial in all of this, what may even be being covered up by renaming it and removing it from its biblical anchor. The day Yom Teruah speaks to us, the day of the blowing of the shofar. What is this about the blowing of the shofar that we are meant to know? And actually, by calling it Rosh Hashanah, we lose that connection. We lose the link. And if we lose the link, then we are most certainly not going to be asking what we're meant to be alert to and wake up to. A failure of warning in this way means that we would not be prepared for what is about to happen. It's really important. And if we're diverted from this, we'll miss something really vital. And it is really clear, is it not? The shofar, right? The little one here, we've got big ones, we're going to blow one of them in a moment. Clearly from this day, from the Torah, the shofar is the key to whatever is going on that we need to understand. As it is blown and as we listen to it, it is arguably central to everything that happens today. It's all about the shofar. So I'm going to link a couple of passages together. Because, you know, if we're going to find the truth of this, if we're going to find the answer through all of this, we're going to find it in the Word of God. I mean, clearly, that is where we're going to go. And I know there's some wonderful books written about this, and people have studied all these things and so on, and I've read them, and you've read them, and that's wonderful. I want to go, if I can, a little bit deeper. I want to, you know, drill into this a bit further and see if we can draw out some other ideas and thoughts around with all of this as well. The first one I'm going to go to is a very ancient one. From the book of Joshua, and you'll know this, of course, and it is in Joshua 6:1-5. Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I've given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go all around the city once. This you shall do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear 7 shofarim, there it is, before the ark. The 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the shofarim. Then it shall come to pass, when they make the long blast on the shofar, that's the one that's mentioned, the long blast on the shofar, when you hear the sound of the shofar, that all the people shall shout with a great shout. Then the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up every man straight before him. It's the first time that we kind of get a reference to the shofar being used in a very specific way. And it's actually two little themes that come out of this. There's more coming in a moment, but the two we can draw straight away, I think, from this. If this day, the Yom Teruah, the blowing of the shofar, is connected with this, and it goes back through history, we need to draw these threads forward to try and fill out what this day is all about. And two things stand out straight away as they're going around Jericho. The shofar was blown and the people shouted. There was a shout that came out from the people and the shofar. The shofar at this point clearly was a warning. It was a warning to the inhabitants of Jericho that the judgment of God was about to fall. And that judgment fell after 6 days with the final long blast. That's when the judgment of God fell. And the walls inwardly imploded, or outwardly imploded at that point, and the people of God could march in. I love the fact that they were able to march in without a shot being fired, as it were. Wonderful, isn't it? The judgment of God fell, and the people saw it. The nations, as it were, the inhabitants of Jericho saw the power of the living God of Israel at that point. But the shofar blowing was a warning. A warning for the judgment of God to come. That's one of the big indications that we get through all of this. The shout is connected with it too. A loud shout from the people. Whether it's a straightforward shout or a shout of jubilation or whatever it is, but the nation with one voice lifted their voices and shouted at that point as the shofar was blown. The next theme that we've got that comes up through all of this as well, we're going to forward a little bit now to Isaiah. And that's Isaiah 27. And here we go. This is from, I'm going to pick up here from 12 and 13. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord will thresh from the channel of the river to the brook of Egypt, and you will be gathered one by one, you children of Israel. And so it shall be in that day when the great shofar will be blown, that you will come who are about to perish in the land of Assyria, they who are outcast in the land of Egypt, and shall worship the Lord in the holy mount at Jerusalem. The shofar is blown, and the people of Israel are gathered back to the land again. Again, picking up from Isaiah 11. Similar kind of themes. And this is verses 10 to 12. And in that day there shall be a root of Jesse who will stand as a banner to the people. For the Goyim shall seek him, and his resting place shall be glorious. This is clearly talking about Yeshua. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again a second time to recover the remnant of his people who are left. Assyria, Egypt, Paphos, Cush, Elam, Shinar, Hamath, and the islands of the sea, wherever we have been spread, he will take back again. He will set up a banner for the nations and will assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. The regathering which is talking about here from Isaiah is quite pointed in all of this. The linkage with the first passage there with the blowing of the great shofar illustrates that yes, on one hand it is a warning, but when the shofar is blown, it is the beginning of the final prophetic ingathering of Israel from the diaspora. And not only that, as it also says here in Isaiah, those from the Gentiles are invited to come with us, join us and be a part of it. That's what Isaiah says, the Goyim too will come back, as it were, to Israel as Jews, converts, from forming this renewed humanity, the Jewish universal vision that we see. But the blowing of the shofar clearly links this festival with these themes. The judgment of God is beginning. The ingathering of our nation back to the land again to worship Adonai. the Gentiles being invited to come and join us in that, as our role as Israel to worship the one true God, the shouts of the people going up, all of these are linked into one core idea which anchors itself into this one day of Yom Teruah, the blowing of the shofar. This is the day when that great shofar is blown as a warning and as an ingathering. I mean, so much, that's just a quick scrape here. There's other passages, but you'll find them for yourself. A quick scrape of how some of these themes link together. But it's not just from the Tanakh, is it? Yeshua makes exactly the same kind of point. Again, I'm going to just zoom forward here to the Besorah of Matichel. And so just go to the end here. This is chapter 24 and picking up from 30. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels out with a great sound of a shofar. And they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. There's the great shofar again. That's the great shofar referenced in Isaiah. And Yeshua says, on the day when this great shofar is blown, he says, he will gather the elect from the four corners of the earth. And the elect, again, as Isaiah says, is not just those who are born Jewish, those from the Gentiles and the Goyim, who are also his elect and chosen ones, will come with at that time, all the way through diaspora. But we get one little addition, I think, in here, and that is the sign of the Son of Man appears in the heavens. There's something about this day when we need to kind of look up and see what the sign might be. It doesn't actually tell us exactly what it is at that point. Okay, we then go to the only other reference, really, that we have on this. And that, of course, is what we heard this morning, is Thessalonians. There's not that many references to this, but there are a few, and we do have to draw them together to get the ideas together. This is from the 1 Thessalonians passage, chapter 4, and 16 to 18. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven, just as Yeshua said, Matthew 24, Son of Man coming on the clouds, will descend from heaven with a shout. There's our shout again. With the voice of an archangel and the shofar of God. And the dead in Messiah will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And thus we shall always be with the Lord. Therefore comfort one another with these words. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole rapture thing. There's a talk on YouTube if you're interested. You can go and have a closer listen to that. But what is obvious about this is this is the return of his people back to the land, caught up when the great shofar is blown. The dead rise. Those who are still alive get caught up and are returned, taken back to Israel again. This is what is happening before our eyes. And the shout goes up and the shofar from heaven is blown. I like this, right? Really, because it says here that the shofar is blown from heaven. What was the command that we had on this day? To hear it. Now you get it? Now you know why it's only a command to hear it and not blow it. Because our God is going to blow the shofar. He will blow the shofar from heaven and we will hear it. As our command is, hear it here. And when we hear that shofar being blown supernaturally in a way that I can't even begin to imagine, but we will know it when we hear it, I suspect. At that point, we know we have arrived at that moment in history. Now, God is already returning his people from around the world. 1948, Israel existed again. We have a homeland once more that we can go back to. Waves of Aliyah have happened over the last 50, 60 years, and even before it's gone on. People have returned to Israel. But right at the very end of time, there will still be those who are his who have not yet made that journey back to the land. And God will gather everyone back together in that one place, as he has always promised to do, that he would return us from wherever we were scattered. And it begins with that shofar blowing. There's a shout that goes out as well from heaven in this particular case. But these themes all weave together to provide a snapshot of something which is happening on the day. Yom Teruah. This is the day that is deeply connected with all of these ideas. And as Messianic Jews, we're now getting an answer to what this day is all about. It's deeply connected to Yeshua's return. This is the day. This is the point when we begin to see Mashiach coming again. And it will be linked with a supernatural blast of the shofar and in gathering of the people back to the land again. But it's also a shofar blown, is it not? That is a warning of judgment. And I think this is the point that we have to add on the end of this. If anything, Yom Teruah opens up our autumn High Holy Days, but the one that follows really closely on its feet is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, because that day the judgment falls. And I'll talk a little bit more about that next week, but the two are linked in this way. The warning goes out. Yeshua is returning. And you know, I have my own thoughts and ideas around this, which we talk a little bit about in the Gateway course, that for 10 days, it might be for 10 days, my thought, not scripture, my thought, it just might be that for 10 days the world will look up at the sign of the Son of Man, him returning on the clouds of glory to Jerusalem, and for 10 days the world will look up and think, what is happening? What is this? It's not a comet. It's not a UFO. It's getting closer. What is going on? 10 days. And then the judgment falls. But the beginning of his return would be this day, the Yom Teruah, the great shofar blown from heaven. The warning has gone out. The shofar has been heard. And Mashiach begins to come. But there's another little idea which is kicking around in all of this as well, which is added here for us. But again, it's not a new addition in some ways, but is drawn from a Jewish understanding here that the dead rise first and then those who are alive are gathered and so on. This dead rising first is deeply connected with this shofar blowing, the beginning of the rising of the dead to judgment. We know where this idea emerges, don't we, again, in the Messianic writings. For that, you've got to go right to the book of Revelation. That's where you begin to see it all happening. Again, as it rolls towards Yom Kippur, it reminds us of something deeply important that we really cannot forget, and we do at our peril. I will read it to you because it's really important when we get to the Great White Throne Judgment, as it's called, in the book of Revelation. It's the end of it all. Mashiach has come. The judgment has fallen and the atonement of God is visible for everyone to see. Yeshua, Mashiachenu. And it says this, "And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. And the scroll was opened. The books of the Torah were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life." This is the book of life which Jewish tradition is well aware of. It's not a Christian invention. "And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books," or in the scrolls of the Torah. "The sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them. And they were judged, each one according to his works. Then death and Hades themselves cast into the lake of fire, the second death." But here's the real kick. "And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire." If your name is not in that book of life, in eternal judgment, punishment, call it what you want, is what will be yours on that day. I'm not making this up. It's in the scriptures. it is there for anyone to read. It's not a Christian invention, the rising of the dead at the end of time, just because it's in the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation is a thoroughly Jewish book. It's an apocalyptic Jewish writing. It's not a Christian book. There's nothing about Christians in the book of Revelation. There's nothing about the church in the book of Revelation. It's just simply not there. Been a lot of research done on this recently. I've got books in my library about this if you want to have a look at them. Establishing beyond all doubt, the book of Revelation is a Jewish book about the end times. And we are rapidly moving towards that day. If the thought of this, standing before God, for the judgment to begin to fall, doesn't shock you, scare you, or make you wonder what condition your life is like before God, then I don't know what will. Because this is it. That is it. It's the end. And you get to this point. It begins on Yom Teruah. The warning goes out that Mashiach is coming. And when Yeshua is coming this time, he will come to judge. The first time he came to save. The second time he comes to judge. All humanity resurrected at that point, but not all will go on to life with God for eternity. And do you know what I find a little bit scary in all of this? Because again, you'll hear people go, it's okay, I believe in Yeshua. Look, listen carefully again. And they were judged, each one according to his works. Not his belief, not his interpretation of scripture, his works. And do you know what the works are when they're referenced like this in the Messianic writings? The mitzvot, the commandments. That's what we will be judged by. We've already heard the scroll was opened, the Torah scroll opened, the commandments laid bare, just as we were looking at today. That is what we are judged by. That is the benchmark of a righteous person, right there on that parchment. And if you've ever broken one sin, one of them, one commandment, committed one sin, it is as if you have broken them all, says Yaakov. And, says Jewish understanding also. And there is not one human being alive that has ever kept every single commandment in that way. Well, bar one, Yeshua, Mashiach, as you'd expect. But you're judged according to your works. The dead were judged according to their works by the things which are written in the Torah. Book of Revelation says so. It's your works, it's what you do that you are judged by. There's no point just saying, you know, I know the Lord, I'm going to be fine. Words are easy. The proof is in the actions and the deeds and the lives lived. What you think, what you do, what you say, how you act, how you behave. That's where you look, because that's the fruit of your words. Otherwise your words are empty. Yeshua said that in Matthew 7:21, not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. Words are easy. If you can say with your mouth that Yeshua is Lord, then you better be living a life that backs that up. And that means this. The Torah. He goes on to say, those who do the will of the Father will be in the kingdom. Those who do the will of the Father. What is the will of the Father? There it is. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, strength and soul. Love your neighbour as yourself. Be merciful and kind to the vulnerable, the weak. And. Put a fence around the roof of your house. It's all of this and more. Deal kindly with animals that you don't boil the offspring of an animal right before the mother in her milk. That kind of thing. You know, these acts of mercy, kindness, goodness. Even with animals being, I mean, people just say, oh, it's only an animal, put the cow wherever, who cares if it's walking knee deep in mud? The Torah cares, God cares. Chickens kept millions in a shed where they can barely breathe and are eating each other because they're hungry. God cares. It's in the Torah. Those who actually do the will of the Father are the ones who will go in, says Yeshua. I don't point your fingers because, you know, you point one finger, you've got everything else pointing back at you. I mean, I'm in this boat with everyone else. All of us need to realize right now, as the shofar is blown, that we need to be taken to a place of repentance. So what have we connected? What have we drawn together here? Simple batch of texts, really. There's more we could put in there, but what comes out again and again when you track through the blowing of the shofar, the great shofar, the shouts going up and connected with Messiah and Thessalonians, what really emerges from all of these passages is that Yom Teruah is truly the day of the blowing of the shofar. But its connections lead us on to that, to say that this is the beginning of Yeshua's return to Israel. Yeshua's not going to Washington or anywhere else. He's not going to Rome. He's not interested in Rome. He's going to Jerusalem, where he will rule and reign as King Messiah. What we celebrate today is Messianic Jews. What in fact the scriptures, the Torah, leads us to celebrate today and to be connected with on this festival is the return of Mashiach to Israel, the coming of Messiah. And you know what else the scriptures say? Before Mashiach comes, there is a time of Jacob's trouble, or the so-called birth pangs of Messiah, as the scriptures talk about it in this way. It says that before Mashiach comes, we will see a world that's become a very dangerous place to live, where Israel will be at the very center, according to the book of Revelation. Israel will be at the very center of that unrest. Ring any bells for anyone? I'm not going to go any further than that. But we need to be awake spiritually to what is happening in the world and understand the signs of the times that we've got. Yom Teruah is about announcing the return of Mashiach. That is a time of joy for us as Messianic Jews. Messiah is coming soon. And of course it's Israel that's at the centre of the furor around all of Messiah's return. Of course it is. Israel is the ambassador of the one true God, and this world hates God. Don't be surprised at what we're seeing. This world hates God. Is determined to destroy Israel. This world cannot destroy God. The closest it can do is to destroy Israel and the Jewish people. That's the closest this world can get to destroying God. That's why anti-Semitism has always been so strong and powerful down through the ages. But our project, really, from where we go on from here, in our union, certainly for ourselves as Messianic Jews, in all of this, is to construct and build liturgy and structures around this, these themes reflecting these ancient Jewish themes of Messiah's arrival during the autumn festivals, reawakening old ideas which have lain dormant for so long. It's a great project to be called to. This is what God is asking us to step up and do right now, not just lean back into and onto traditions of old and so on, as good as they often are. I'm not knocking them in that way. I'm just saying, as Messianic Jews, our calling and our task, as Colossians says, is to see the substance of these days and dig deep to find that substance and re-establish it for our sakes, for our nation's sake, prophetically and otherwise today. That is what we're called to do. Yes, repent. Yes, get our lives right before Yeshua's return. Honestly, we'd better. Because when Mashiach returns, it's over, it's finished. There is no more time to do this. We're still living in a time of mercy when we can repent and come to the Lord. That's what this day is all about. And so I will say, Chag Sameach, and may Yeshua come soon, and may it be in our day. Amen.